Thank you, Jerry, for directing us to the way to go forward, giving us the foundation upon which the Eightfold Path rests. So the Eightfold Path, as Jerry has said, is presented in a sequence of three groupings. But the elements of the Eightfold Path are actually, in our experience, they don't happen in a linear way. They arise together and support and balance each other. So I'm going to go forward and talk about the aspects of sila, ethical conduct, which includes wise speech, wise action, and wise livelihood. And then I will finish with the meditation practices, which include wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. So starting with ethics, morality, it's important to understand that in the time of the Buddha, sila wasn't practiced for morality's sake, but for the purpose of liberating the mind from suffering. It was associated with harmony and not with obedience to ethical standards enforced by punishment and guilt, which some of us may think of, or when we think of ethics and morality. The wholesome actions encouraged in sila lead us to a condition of blamelessness that's conducive to a calm state of mind and supports meditation. It's very beneficial to us. So the Eightfold Path begins in wisdom, and then we move out into the world in our daily life, interacting with our family, friends, and other sentient beings. We keep in mind the guiding principles of wise view and wise intention. Do no harm, see the truth. But the application of these simple principles is not always easy. The Buddha says that our path goes against the stream. A lot of our conditioning is aimed at perpetuating a self view of I, me, mine, and perpetuating as well a sense the solidity of family, religion, tribe, and culture. So when our habitual patterns are operating, we can cause harm to others and to ourselves, sometimes without even realizing it. Pema Chodron says, not causing harm requires staying awake. And part of being awake is slowing down to notice what we say and do. The more we witness our emotional chain reactions and understand how they work, the easier it is to refrain. It becomes a way of life to stay awake, slow down, and notice. So the Eightfold Path is the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path is the main teaching of the Buddha. It was the first teaching he taught. And it may seem like right speech or right action is, you know, just kind of commonplace. Well, that's not anything too hard to do. But it really, really does take a lot of alertness because of our conditioning, that where we act automatically. So we have to be awake and notice. Let's take speech as an example. Let's say when speaking to a friend, I notice a change in the friend's expression. I might pick up a clue that the friend is confused or hurt or angry by something I've said. And I might notice an unease in my body that tells me my words were not appropriate, that something was off. I might start to contemplate what effect what I said had on my friend. I might check my intention and ask myself, what was I thinking? Or what was I thinking? I might then realize that what I said was not so well thought out. Maybe it was said with an intention to impress or to defend, or maybe I exaggerated or spoke in a sarcastic tone. There are many possibilities, but the point is that wise speech and wise action require diligent discernment. There's a sutta where the Buddha teaches his son Rahula about repeated reflection with respect to wise speech and wise action. It's called Instructions to Rahula at the Mango Stone. And on this occasion, it was reported that 7-year-old Rahula had told a deliberate lie. After giving Rahula many examples of why he should not tell a deliberate lie, even in jest, the Buddha asked him the question, "What is a mirror for?" And Rahula replied, "For reflection, sir." The Buddha then said, in the same way, Rahula, bodily actions and verbal actions and mental actions are to be done with repeated reflection. Rahula, you should ask if the action leads to self-affliction, to the affliction of others, or to both. Is it an unskillful action with painful consequences, painful results? If so, then you should confess it, reveal it to a teacher or a knowledgeable companion in the holy life. Then you should exercise restraint in the future. If, on the other hand, you know that it did not lead to affliction, that it was skillful and with pleasant consequences, then you can be refreshed and joyful, training day and night in skillful qualities. Whenever you want to do an action, you should reflect on it. While you are doing the action, you should reflect on it. Having done the action, you should reflect on it. All those Brahmins and contemplatives in the past, in the present, and in the future have and will continue to purify their actions through repeated reflection. Thus, Rahula, you should train yourself through repeated reflection. The Eightfold Path is a path of reflection. Now, while we're reflecting on our speech and actions, we also need to keep in mind the negative bias that tends to have us notice the unwholesome and unskillful more often than we notice the wholesome and the skillful in ourselves. Even our teachers, whom we admire, can be subject to this bias. And Joseph Goldstein tells how his teacher, in an interview, told him that he needed to contemplate his goodness and be prepared to discuss it at the next interview, because in their interviews, he was only reporting on his perceived faults. And I don't know about you, but I know for myself, when I look at the Eightfold Path, I quickly come up with the places that I am remiss, things I haven't cultivated yet, things I have to refrain from. So, I am saying in this talk tonight that it's really important to also look at the good parts, the positive parts. We need to awaken to our goodness also. Ajahn Suchito talks about being subject to what he calls an inner tyrant, which is an inner voice which many of us have, which criticizes us unmercifully. We need to make a point of being awake to our goodness, our kindness, our honesty, and our sincere efforts to follow the Eightfold Path, as well as having a healthy ability to acknowledge when there is room for improvement. We need to remember that it's progress, not perfection. We might need to forgive ourselves. One forgiveness phrase I often use is, "I am a learner, still learning life's lessons. I forgive myself for making mistakes and not being perfect." And when I say this, I realize that I don't always think of myself as a learner. I think of myself as someone who should be perfect. So the Eightfold Path is something that we can work on every day of our lives. It's a lifelong path, and we need to be comfortable with not being at the end of it at the beginning of our journey. So let's take a closer look at wise speech for a minute to find out some of the specific kinds of speech that we're asked to refrain from. We also need to remember that these days speech includes oral and written communication in social media, emails, texts, tweets, entertainment, news, and it's easy for our mind to be bombarded in an unhealthy way with too much communication. So we need to be mindful of what we hear and read, as well as what we say and write. The kinds of speech specifically we're asked to refrain from are false speech, which includes telling obvious lies, but also exaggeration, joking, and lying by omission. So you can see that we really have to be very awake to follow the Eightfold Path. We also refrain from divisive speech, such as blaming, harsh speech, which is often impulsive and defensive and includes sarcasm, and frivolous speech or idle chatter is also to be avoided. There are a few questions you can ask before speaking, and these questions can help guide us as we aspire to use wise speech. We can ask ourselves, is it true? Is it useful? Is this the right time? Is it moderate and full of sense? Is it for me to say? And if not, it's fine not to say anything. Silence is really okay. And I've noticed for myself that I do pause and not say anything more than I used to because of these guidelines. And I don't think I think I'm still able to communicate well with people. So I would just suggest noticing silence and the actual beneficialness of silence sometimes. While we refrain from harmful speech, we can cultivate wise speech, which includes loving speech, truthful speech, gentle speech, speech that benefits the listener rather than our own ego. Sometimes I really have to pause and think about this, that I'm going about to say something that really is for the benefit of my own ego. And speech that comes from a heart of goodwill. This kind of speech is informed and inspired by deep listening, which happens when we listen to Dharma talks. And I think a lot of you know when we have discussions with our spiritual friends, like in the breakout groups. In the Buddha's time, many people were enlightened just by hearing one of the Buddha's Dharma talks. Before we move on to the element of wise action, I want to point out that these guidelines for wise speech pertain to the speech inside our head, which we say to ourselves as well. Often these self messages are unconscious, but recognizing and cultivating kind and loving inner speech, and recognizing and refraining from false, harsh, or critical inner speech is part of the path to liberation too. Now we can move on to wise action. We're asked to refrain from taking life, from taking what is not offered, and from sexual misconduct. Remembering that the purpose of sila is living in harmony with ourselves and other sentient beings, and ultimately our planet Earth, we want to live in a harmless and responsible way. Just as with speech, this requires us to slow down and to be awake, to notice when we are acting thoughtlessly and letting our habits rule rather than reflecting before, during, and after we act. As the Buddha admonished his son Rahula to do, It is not enough to be alert on the cushion. We need to be alert in the middle of our busy, filled with distractions and temptations daily life. So refraining from taking life, it helps to remember that all beings want to live and fear death. All beings seek happiness and fear pain. And it helps this view helps us develop compassion and refrain from taking life. Refraining from taking what is not offered, it's easy to know that it is unethical to take what is under lock and key, but when something appears to be there for the taking, it's still good to ask, has this been offered? Has it been offered to me? We can also consider not taking intangibles like another person's respect or taking someone's decision-making ability. For this refraining from taking what is not offered, it does help to cultivate generosity and also gratitude for what one has. Refraining from sexual misconduct. The intent of this aspect of wise action is to contain sexual desires and promote renunciation. And since craving is the fundamental cause of suffering, it makes a lot of sense that refraining from impulsive and thoughtless sexual conduct is advised. One precept version is stated in this way, so that we look at both the positive and the negative. And that precept is, I vow to do my best to be open to intimacy and connection and to refrain from unethical intimacy. The last of these elements of sila is wise livelihood. Since we spend a lot of our time and energy making a living, the primary intent of wise livelihood is that our livelihood be in a profession that does not bring harm to others. In the Buddha's time, the occupations were to avoid dealing in weapons, slavery, prostitution, meat production, poisons, and intoxicants. But in today's complex world, with so many stresses experienced in the workplace, there are some modern dilemmas to consider. One teacher pointed out that our livelihood is not just about making money, but includes our lifestyle. For example, when we are retired, we can still consider the major activities of our day, our recreation, our consumption, our transportation, our hobbies. And of course, in this time of a climate crisis, we need to reflect on not causing harm to the earth and all its creatures as much as possible. Another teacher noticed a difference between his mind state at work as a physicist and his mind state when he went on retreat. And he noticed that his mind kept on working like a physicist when he was on retreat, and his heart didn't have a place at the retreat. With respect to wise livelihood, he asked his students to look at how their livelihood affected their mind and heart. Is your heart and mind balanced and integrated at work? He asked. I think that might be something that would be helpful to some of us. But this is kind of bringing this element into the modern world. It seems like it does need to be looked into. Recently, participants in the Dedicated Practitioners program at Spirit Rock had some interesting thoughts and questions about wise livelihood. Here are a few of them. One person asked, what about working in a broken system like healthcare? I'm putting energy into something that's defective. Another commented, I'm doing a service. It's good work, but my work is stressful. I feel like I don't do this work anymore. I can't do this work anymore, but I'm 2 years from retirement. And another asked, what about investing money for my retirement? I'm doing this, but I don't know how my money is being used. So you can see that reflection is really needed all the time in our daily life to have an ethical life. So it is not an easy, this is not an easy path. But something that can help us is that many of these ethical elements of sila are found in the five training precepts, which remind us to vow to do our best to refrain from, and then the precepts are to refrain from killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, harsh speech, idle speech, slander, and to refrain from taking intoxicants that could cloud the mind and cause heedlessness. When we think of these, we need to remember that all of this is training, and we are undertaking with the intention to do our best to be awake, to slow down, to understand and reflect on what we say and do in order to have a more harmonious and blameless life. It's a path of increased understanding and wisdom, not a path for creating judgment and guilt. We can also support ourselves with the Ten Paramis, because we can think about the positive behaviors we have. The Paramis are generosity, virtue, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, resolve, loving kindness, and equanimity. And you can hear that if we pay attention to those Paramis, we are going to be on the path. We are going to be practicing ethical behavior and being kind and harmless. Lyndall Johnson pointed out in a recent article in the Parami about the Paramis in the Sims newsletter that when we begin to look, we are sure to find the Paramis. Cultivating mindfulness, resting in awareness, we create a space for the Paramis to become visible. So as we aspire to follow the Eightfold Path, we can use the other leg of the stool, the meditation leg, to help us look at the positive and perpetuate the positive behaviors that we already have, maintain them, and they will help us along the path. Let's see. So we now come to, yes, the third and final grouping of the path of liberation holds the meditative threesome: wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. When our conduct in the world is wholesome and kind, our minds are quieter and our heart feels at peace. And in this way, the development of meditative states is nurtured. The three work together: effort and mindfulness, which is also sati in Pali. Effort and mindfulness balance each other to help achieve sustained concentration, which is samadhi. Sustained concentration is needed to reveal the insight and vision, that final wisdom that penetrates to the deepest truth. Wise effort supplies the energy, and mindfulness provides the steadiness. So, even at the beginning of our path with meditation, we're developing the ability for our mind to be able to liberate. We start with a mind full of luminous potential, but it's veiled in defilements like craving, delusion, and aversion. And our goal is the liberated mind, purified and illuminated by wisdom. But purifying the mind requires effort and energy, diligence, exertion, perseverance, to keep returning to mindfulness in the present moment. Each time the mind gets tangled up in a defilement or a hindrance, mindfulness helps untangle the tangle by simply observing the arising and passing away of the four foundations of mindfulness, such as body sensations, feelings, mind states. Concentration in our tradition, the Vipassana tradition, directs mindfulness to the changing states of mind and body, noting any phenomena that presents itself. And the goal is to maintain a continuous awareness of whatever enters the range of perception and to cling to nothing. Concentration becomes stronger moment by moment. Unification becomes steady, and in time acquires a force capable of suppressing the hindrances. When concentration is sufficiently strong, it results in a breakthrough to the last stage of the path, the rising of wisdom. So with concentration, we've come to the last of the eight elements of the Eightfold Path, but concentration in and of itself is not the end goal of the path. Concentration does not end suffering. The Buddha learned that 2,600 years ago when he mastered all the levels of meditative absorption and surpassed all his teachers. It is wisdom that is the end of the path and cessation of clinging. With our movement along the path, we gain knowledge from our direct experience of our practice with Panya, Sila, and with meditation. And the ultimate wisdom for all of us is to free ourselves from the delusion of selfhood, to see how our mind creates our world with a self at the center, but the self is not a solid entity. When we start out on our path, we see the three characteristics as concepts. There is anatta, not self. There is anicca, impermanence. There is dukkha, unsatisfactoriness. But the path culminates when we penetrate these truths with insight through our own personal experience. The eight factors of the path are all around us every day to practice with. We orient ourselves in the right direction with a view based on truth and an intention of goodwill, and we refrain from conduct that harms and cultivate conduct that is beneficial. We develop the wholesome habits of mindfulness and concentration that lead to insight into the truth of the way things are. And as Bhikkhu Bodhi says at the end of his book, The Noble Eightfold Path, the only requirement for reaching the final goal are two. The only requirements are two, and that's to start and to continue. So that's the end of the talk. We'll just sit for a moment, taking in all these eight elements that we've just listened to today. See which ones are rising to the surface.